I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, I've been asking you when football season starts for you all show so far. And also want to remind you today at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific, join CBS Sports Network live from the Meadowlands for the premier event in American harness racing, as top trotters compete in the 2019 Hambletonian Stakes on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. But before I switch to the topic I was going to get to, and that is the sickness in sports media, it can be summed up with one name, not even a full name, just one name. I want to make sure I let everybody get their piece heard on when football season starts for them, because that it's not a topic like for me. Like, that's a topic for callers, right? And for show interaction, because it is completely uninteresting as a topic if it were just me telling you, hey, for me, football season starts when fantasy football drafts come around. The end. That is not a topic. It is a topic designed for caller interaction, for show interaction, for, you know, like the communal nature of how we consume sports. Downtown Rob 88 tweets in, NFL starts at game one. Not interested in the preseason. Willie Messicanian says, Robin, NFL starts on Sunday, Labor Day weekend. I don't watch Thursday night. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line 855-212-4227 is brought to you by Geico. Great news, there's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Joe in Richmond, Illinois. Joe, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Robin. Great show. Love listening to you every weekend. I guess the football season starts for me around the third game of the preseason, even though I'm a Bears season ticket holder, and I hate paying those prices. But I got a quick question for you.
Sure.
And all the coaches do it. They say it's a copycat league. It's the only sport where in the preseason they all, oh, we play vanilla. Well, you're practicing. Now you're going to go into the preseason and practice plays you've only practiced in practice. And the NFL, with the technology they have, by the second game, they know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So why not just play your regular plays? Who cares about showing your cards? Just play, practice those plays during the game so you've got them down. That's my point. I hate this, oh, we're vanilla. We're going to show vanilla offense, vanilla defense. It just drives me crazy.
Well, I think it's a little bit of arrogance at times. I mean, look, there's something to the strategy, right? And there are things you want to hold. And football is probably the sport where we get the most consumed in the coaching strategy. But to your point, you are correct in a sense where they get over the top, like about like what you're hiding and whatnot. Like the pick and roll works, right? Everybody runs the pick and roll, but you can't stop it. It's about execution. Same thing with like in college, an option. You know, those things work whether you've seen them or not. If they are executed properly, that's why they are good plays. I mean, I think the only plays I would really be hesitant to give away would be anything that is drastically different than what the team does normally, or a trick play, right? Because once you sniff out a trick play, they usually get squashed. But you're right. I think sometimes coaches take themselves a little bit seriously. But, I mean, that's part of the profession and the job, I guess, if you will. But you always – what's the trope with NFL coach? 20 hours a week. We never sleep. We don't even eat except for when we're in the playbook. Our playbook doubles as a menu so we could figure out what we're going to eat, because we can't look away from the playbook in order to eat. We have to select the food, and then we eat the pages of the playbook instead of actual food. We just like to pretend it's the food we ordered, but we have extra pages in the playbook so we can eat and not look away from our playbook. Yeah, like that's sort of the, I mean, the only thing we think about is football coaches are the only ones you hear that, right? What was Nick Saban's thing? Somebody asked him a question about, like, you know, there was a genuine real life story that everybody has a feeling about. He's like, I didn't hear about that. I only think about football. I don't care about anything else. I don't care about oxygen or water, just football. Shelter, who cares? All I need is football to sustain me. And anyone else is a loser who needs anything other than football. Let's go to Antonio in Oakland. Antonio, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Antonio?
Hey, what's going on? Good morning.
How are you?
Season, good. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, the season starts for me. The season starts for me next Saturday. We start to tear down the old Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. Been a part of my life since I've been was born. I was born actually in August of '65. The stadium was built in '65. I don't remember the season of '65, but you know, just to see the Raiders leaving, the team leaving, going to. It's going to be tough, man. So, I mean, you can't get to actually go see the Hard Knocks. You can't get into the training camp because Al Davis back in the day was a secretive guy. You thought they were flying over the top of the practice field and taping the games way back then, way before Belichick.
Mm-hmm. Before Belichick actually infiltrated stadiums with high-tech spy gear. He's got guys in all black suits going over trip wires and the like and rappelling from helicopters via rope into stadiums to go spy on people. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to the season, but that's when it starts. I mean, I know basketball today hasn't caught up at all yet. It's getting kind of close, but I'm just getting super hyped about the season. I'm hoping for 7 wins with my team. Vegas has us at 6. Actually, what do you think? How do you think the Raiders are going to do this year?
Better than last year. How about that? I'll go out on that ledge. They will be better. What were they, 4-12 last year? They'll be better than that. I'm not going to go too far in the other direction, but I feel confident they'll be better than 4-12. You know, you mentioned basketball hasn't caught up. Nothing has caught up to football. Football is the most watched sport in this country. It's not close, right? Like, there's no, you could talk about ratings falling. There's an old Jay-Z line, even if I fell, I'd land on a bunch of money. Like, that's basically the NFL. They can fall, but they're falling from such a high perch that they're still landing above everyone else. I would argue that actually basketball has surpassed the NFL when it comes to the NBA, at least, as a talking point. Like, it may be talked about just as much, if not even and more at times. But as far as just pure, like, watching, eyeballs, nothing's touching football. And then overall, you know, that would indicate what overall interest is because there's such a wide demographic for that sport, too. You know, that's the sport that is cared about in urban areas and suburban areas and rural areas. Flyover parts of the country and bustling metropolises. So, you know, that's part of the appeal. I think part of the appeal is sort of what we're talking about today, which is when it starts for you, there's a communal nature to it because it has a day of the week. You know, because people do their fantasy drafts together. Or we had a caller earlier talking about he gets together with his buddies every year for the opening kickoff because people watch Sunday together. They go to their bar where their team is playing and watch the games there or whatnot. Whatever that is for you, I think that's part of the appeal as well. And then, you know, you have parts of the country where football is so ingrained in the culture there, you know, places like Texas and Alabama and those places where even on the college level, you know, that's just such a part of the country that those places aren't necessarily into other sports, maybe even at all. And some, I'm not talking about every individual, but I'm talking about, like, you know, as a broad brushstrokes whole. So that's, you know, where the evidence comes from. You know, it's just the eyeballs, the rating. I talked about the Hall of Fame game was down 15% or whatever. still was 6 million viewers or whatever it was. That's a lot for a game that does not matter. That wasn't talked about. I didn't hear anybody talk about anything from that game after the fact. Again, that's what I'm saying. There's maybe a difference, you know, with basketball, like talking points. The NBA, which I'm about to get to in a second, constantly drives talk. But football is number one, and it's not close when it comes to, you know, and will it be that way forever? That's another topic for another day. You know, I've spent many hours on various platforms discussing the future of football as a sport when it comes to, you know, some of the things we know about it now and some of the dangers of playing it and participation and the like. But when we're talking currently, where we sit right this second, I mean, it's amongst the most popular things in this country, if it is not the single most popular thing in this country. It could be, in fact, the single most popular thing in this country where you can get the most people to agree on or share an interest in. How about Richard in Myrtle Beach? Richard, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, Richard?
Hey, beautiful day in paradise down here. Two things real quick. Football season starts with me. I hate to say it. I've been a Redskins fan for 50 years. So when the Redskins open the regular season, whether it's a Sunday or whenever, that's when it starts for me. And I have one quick question for you. I know you're coming up on a break. How could the Redskins let McVay go to the Rams and not fire Gruden and put McVay in as coach for the Redskins? Because that's what they need.
Have you heard? Are you familiar with the name Daniel Snyder?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have for too long.
whenever you're asking, like, how about like a team that has made a lot of bad decisions and has been bad for a long time, usually the answer is the owner. And if you're saying, show who are the worst owners in sports right now, I think James Dolan has to be number one, and I would guess probably my pick for number two would be Dan Snyder.
Hey, I vouch for that. I'll vote for it. Thank you so much. Love the show, buddy.
Thank you. Appreciate the time, man. 855-212-4227 is the number. Coming up next, I'll get to the sickness in sports media that I've been alluding to that was on display this week. And yeah, I could give it away. It rhymes with I'm gone. Bon Bon. LeBron. It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
You know, Shep, who's running the board, he really likes sucking up to me. Anthony, have you noticed that? He's got this, his strategy is to have to do it directly. He cuts up the callers and then compliment, you know, it's like, here's someone complimenting you. I mean, and A, I'm not saying it doesn't work. Who doesn't? Is there anyone who's ever been mad and was like, hey, you're really great? What do you think of that? Well, I think that, yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you there. we were talking about dogs during the break very quickly. Have you ever been, I noticed I was scrolling through some pictures on Instagram, but people like love dogs. And you know how you know people love dogs? You ever been in an office when a dog comes in? Somebody brings their dog to the office for some reason. People are like, oh my God, it's a dog. I've never seen a dog before. So, I'm not anti-dog. In fact, I have a dog, a squirrel-sized dog. I just don't get, you know, over the top about dogs. I don't love them that much.
You also said you had a phobia.
Yeah, the dogs are my biggest phobia, for sure.
So did you have some kind of traumatic experience when you were younger?
I don't know. You know, there's not like necessarily I got bitten by a radioactive spider story. But here's the best thing I can give you, because I am afraid of dogs. Like, I'm afraid of strange dogs. Now, once I get to know them, I'm fine. Like, or if I realize they're not, I'm still never like, I'm going to wrestle you. But definitely have apprehension and fear towards dogs, and this is my best take at a origin story for it. So I lived in a place called Lusby, Maryland, 15 minutes from nowhere, in the sticks. You know, once found a massive snapping turtle under my car, and snakes in the yard, that kind of deal. So, our house was at the bottom of a hill, a gravel street. And, I mean, you're talking a hill like, I don't know, a couple hundred yards up. So, not a small hill. And I would travel around by bicycle, of course, as one would. And at the top of the hill, there was this collie. I mean, I shouldn't be afraid of a collie, because what's a collie? Like, I don't know, 20 pounds? But if that, it was a ferocious collie. I mean, it would bark like no other and run back and forth from side to side barking at you behind its little fence. But the collie wasn't the real problem. I would go by the collie. But I would be getting my momentum up as I went by the collie, not just to get by the collie in case it broke out of its fence and started going after my heels, but because in the middle of the hill, where I lived at the bottom, was this German shepherd named Augie. His name was Augie. And like a German shepherd is a real, that's a wolf, right? When you see a German shepherd, what's the difference between a German shepherd and a wolf? Can't be that much of a difference. It's a wolf-like creature. And this German Shepherd was behind one of those electric fences where there's no visible, you know, structure between you and the dog. And he would come right up to the edge of it like baring his teeth. So I would always get my momentum going on my bike like as I'm getting to the top of the hill so that I could speed down that hill. In case Augie ever broke through his electric fence, I would have enough momentum on my bike that I could make it into my garage in my house at the bottom of the hill before Augie was able to rip me to shreds. And the other kids in the neighborhood were mean to this dog. Like, I'm just not, I was never wired that way where I would like throw rocks at a creature, but they would like throw rocks at Augie. So Augie was kind of justifiably pissed off all the time. And that was like a thing I had to go through. And then one day, I know I was happening by, I was walking by, I believe, and Augie's owner is out there, and he saw my fear of the dog as I was going by. Like, you know how you like walk and you like take like a roundabout curve, even though you're walking in a straight line, but you curve so that there's more space between you and whatever the thing is that you want to avoid? And to me, that was Augie, and he's like, well, what's wrong? Well, this is a great dog. Come here, come say hi to Augie. So I go over there, and I'm going to say hi to this dog. And he's like, put your hand out. And the dog, like, snaps in my hand. And I pulled it back. And he's like, oh, no, he never does that. So there it is. That, like, maybe there was a natural phobia that was enforced by this wolf-like German Shepherd. But that's the origin, Anthony, of my dog phobia. Did that work? Did that satisfy?
It's understandable.
Yeah.
But now I feel bad for the dog because you're telling me that the kids used to throw rocks at the poor dog.
Of course. Yeah, you feel, you know, these kids... First day I moved into that, second day, you know, if somebody came to my house and asked me what I wanted to do if I wanted to go copperhead hunting. So that was like I'm no joke, copperheads, poisonous, venomous snakes. And somebody came to my door because I was new in town, like, hey, you want to go hunt copperhead? No, I do not. Even though I'm 12, I know that that's not something I want to do. I'm old enough to realize that is not something that I would like to do. Go copperhead hunting. All right. Hey, look, I spent so much time on dogs, and I don't even have time to get into the topic now without like getting cut by the break. But let me, I'll start it like this. The David Griffin stuff about LeBron James, there is something to explore in regards to that, as far as the environment around LeBron and what can be created as such and the stress that can come around as such. And if you missed it, David Griffin did in a piece with SI where he talked about how at times, because of all the noise, it felt miserable building around LeBron in Cleveland. And then he also said that the quote was that LeBron wasn't the same animal after winning the championship in Cleveland. Now, Griffin has since gone on the record afterwards almost apologizing and saying that that second part was meant to be in reference to his own fears after the championship, that he feared LeBron wouldn't be the same animal because of the magnitude of the championship. but that it wasn't actually the case, that his fears were unfounded. And he also said that the quotes about being miserable and the stress were not about LeBron himself, but about the environment that is created around LeBron because of the coverage LeBron receives. And that's, you know, before, you know, I get into Griffin and his comments specifically, that is what I want to touch on, because there's really something there as far as that environment, that unhealthy environment that comes around LeBron that really, for a lot of it, is not his fault directly. And that's what Griffin said when he walked back his comments, because he had to walk back his comments for very much the same reason that his comments existed for the first in the first place. Everyone started talking about them because it is part of this industry to talk about LeBron James now. Like, it's reached, especially this summer, I think there's been a couple instances where it's borderline, like, it's almost psychotic, like some weirdo stuff going on.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Here's a quiz for you, Shep, and you should know the answer considering I'm the one asking you. Who wrote this song?
Oh my God. Is this P. Diddy?
Well, no, yes, that is P. Diddy, but who wrote the song?
She's a very good singer.
Well, Skylar Grey sang the song, but who wrote the song?
I don't know. I'm stumped.
Jay-Z.
I should have got that.
Yeah. I told you that. I gave you the hint.
I should have got
coming
that.
Coming in. I don't even like this song.
If you said entrepreneur, mogul, Brooklyn Nets, I would have got it.
The first thing is rapper. Before you get to any of that other stuff, there's no Jay-Z without the rapping part. All that other stuff is an offshoot. I mean, it's impressive, but all that is an offshoot of being the greatest rapper of all time, you realize, right?
But if you're an NBA guy, you know him from the Nets.
No, I don't think so. No, I think most people do not know Jay-Z from the Nets. No, I think most people knew Jay-Z way before the Nets. And there are far more people that know Jay-Z from Beyonce, if they're just like ignorant of everything else, than the Nets. I don't know, like, but I don't know. I'm not even, no, the Nets. No one knows Jay-Z from the Nets. No one. There's not a single person who that's the only reason that they know Jay-Z. If they were Nets fans, they knew who he was before then. I'm almost certain. All right. You know, Jay-Z and LeBron, those are the ones that I'll get crap for being stands of. And that's fair. I certainly am a Jay-Z stan. And I certainly am, in many ways, a LeBron stan as well, in the sense that I think LeBron is the best player who's ever lived and all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. But that's not the point I'm trying to make today. You know, I was talking about David Griffin's comments before. And, you know, David Griffin's comments, he said he was out of context. I'll be fair to him in the sense that he walked it back and everything. He saw the reaction to it. But he did say those things, and they were spun the way they were. And look, I mean, when you're making comments the way he did, you have to be aware of what those words are going to mean to people, considering the subject he was talking about. Because he was basically, his point was, the article's point was, that he learned lessons from his previous jobs, his job especially in Cleveland. And he's applying those lessons in how to build the Pelicans now. But part of the framework of that was just the constant stress that came with running a LeBron team. And therefore, he has to be more aware than almost anyone that what you say about LeBron is going to stick, regardless of the context of those comments. So I did think, you know, he was a little out of line for some of the stuff he said, especially because I like David Griffin a lot. I think he's good at his job. I thought he did a great job with the Cavs, to be honest. He made moves on the margins that were quite impressive. You know, when that team was cap-strapped, the J.R. Smith trade, for instance, they needed shooting. They needed some athleticism. He brought in Smith and Shumpert in a deal, and that really helped them win a championship. You can say whatever you want about J.R. Smith, but the Cavs don't win that title in 2016 without J.R. Smith. I forget what they were down at half, but they were down like 7 or 8 points at half. And J.R. Smith had a 8-0 run, I think, himself at the beginning of that third quarter. So, you know, David Griffin did a nice job. But, I mean, David Griffin does not have his current job if it wasn't for LeBron James. He's not who he is if it wasn't for LeBron James. And when he also said that he, questioned whether LeBron would be the same animal about winning, he since has clarified those comments. But when you hear that on the surface, you think, yeah, that's not really cool considering somebody who's had his back publicly. You know, LeBron has supported him publicly, and also just the evidence that runs contrary to it, which is that they went to the finals the year after they won the championship. And then, and I actually think that team that went to the finals the year after they won the championship was better than the team that won the championship. It's just the Warriors had added Kevin Durant that offseason. And then they went to the finals again the following year. Again. And that was the year where LeBron really did it by himself. You know, he sometimes people say he did it by himself. LeBron's had great teammates throughout his career. Let's not be, like, dishonest. I'm not, like, some blind person who's just saying stuff to say stuff. When he was in Miami, you know, they made four straight finals, but part of the reason is Wade and Bosh, right? I mean, you need some support system. When they got to Cleveland, you know, Kyrie and Love, he had other players. You don't have success without other players. But that last finals that he went to, he did not. That team, you know, I think that should be amongst the greatest accomplishments of his career is getting that team to the final. So, those comments, I don't think were a great look for David Griffin, but they're not really what I want to get into as much today. They're sort of a symptom of what I want to get into, which is a borderline sickness, I think, when it comes to LeBron. And I know I'm at the risk of sounding hypocritical because I've talked about the guy plenty. I talk about him a lot. It's important in a sense. Like, you have to. It's part of the job. I mean, he is the most significant athlete there is, right? I mean, maybe worldwide you could argue for Ronaldo or Messi, but certainly here. And it's been that way for a long time. And I also think, you know, like, it would be foolish to not do it. Like, you know, people say, why do you talk about LeBron a lot? Well, he comes up a lot. But that would be like going back in time and saying, why did someone talk about Michael Jordan? Or why did someone talk about Muhammad Ali? You know, those figures resonate historically for a reason. So I'll never apologize for, you know, saying good things about maybe the best player who ever lived, in my opinion, the best player who ever lived, or, you know, spending time discussing a relevant topic. But there are nuances and there are degrees. And that's where I think we really need to check some of what gets spewed in sports media in regard to LeBron. Because I think what happened was when he went to, he was always hyped, right? Like, he came out of high school, the chosen one, all that, and hyped. There had never been a high school game televised like that before until LeBron. I remember that. I was in college. I went to watch it at a place called Santa Fe Cafe at the University of Maryland. And at that time, my goal was, I was being like cynical college kid. I was like, I'm going to show them why they're wrong about saying he's the best that's come into the league in the longest time. And I watched like 5 minutes of that game. I was like, nope. Clearly, you could see within just a couple minutes, he had the physical gifts and the mental gifts. Like, he was a basketball genius and a freak of nature. And you put those two things together and you have what you have. So he was always covered like that. But I don't think it was until 2010 when things changed. The decision and the pep rally and all that. The vibe around him changed and the discussion around him changed. And just the confluence of factors. That happened, which brought out an emotional reaction from fans. Whatever you think about it, brought out an emotional reaction. At the same time as social media and the 24/7 news cycle became a thing. all at the same time. And he was like the test subject for it. You know, because that pep rally, the not one, not two, not three, not four, not whatever, that wouldn't have been a big deal at any other time in history up until that point. Because that was the first time, really, like right in that moment where it began to be a thing where if you did anything in public, it could be viral and everywhere in a second. Because that was a pep rally for Miami Heat fans, right? Like, people had done stuff like that before. And in their minds, that wasn't a planned choreographed thing. That was like, ha, 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 we're doing this for Miami Heat fans. But it was right at the time where all of a sudden something could get caught on video and be spread everywhere. Now guys know about that, of course, because they've lived through it. But at that moment, all those things, it was like a perfect storm. And really since then, more or less, since then, LeBron has been a day-to-day talking point in sports media. Every day. Every day. And if we're keeping it real, people have built careers on it. Look, I'm going to be honest with the audience always. LeBron's helped my career. No question about it. No question about it. I've done content that has done numbers. In part, I would like to think, due to the way I present it, but in part due to the fact that I was talking about LeBron James. I'm going to keep it real. But there are others who I think have manipulated it to make careers for themselves. Bashing, whatever, every day. Every day. So when that kind of pattern gets established, that becomes the norm. And that becomes the expectation. And then that becomes, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy in a sense. And I'm not talking about David Griffin's comments, because I think David Griffin's comments would be a story at any point in time, right? Like that's worth being a story. Those are quotes that people are going to have a reaction to, and they are dealing with the biggest. So like there's nuance involved here as to when it gets to a point where it's too far. And some people just might say, you know, they don't want to hear about LeBron. Some people are probably saying it right to themselves right now. Why are you talking about LeBron? I'm tired of hearing about LeBron. But there's a difference when people just go nuts. And I think you saw that this week with the whole AAU thing and LeBron in the layup line, where the sickness, the addict, you know, people were talking about being addicted, him being addicted to fame. I think the sports media is addicted to LeBron. And it gets to be toxic and unhealthy. And that can manifest itself with his teams. And that's the point Griffin was trying to make. You know, the point he was trying to make was basically every day you're under the microscope. There's pressure. And it might not be anything that LeBron did. He might not have said anything. He might not have done anything. He's still getting talked about. Whatever happened in the game is getting talked about. Whatever quote was after the game is getting talked about. And that is a high-intensity, high-pressure environment. And look, that comes with the territory. That comes with being a superstar. But there's a point where it goes a little bit too far. And I thought you saw that this week with the guy was in the layup line with his kids. Or his kid and his teammates. So what? You know why that was a story? Because people made it a story. If you had seen that highlight and somebody gone, hey, look, LeBron joined the layup line at Bronny's AAU game, ha, 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 and moved on, that would have been nothing. But because people have been conditioned to scrutinize and push out LeBron content, and because we're at a time in the sports calendar year where not much else is going on, you saw wild takes about that. Just wild. Like, coming almost from like a bad place, you know, about attacking someone's character and who they are over nothing. Over something that was absolutely nothing. And that's where, you know, sometimes you want to take a step back. Because, like, I'm talking about how much I talk about LeBron. I'm only talking about this because it happened. Like, when that actual story happened, the day of that, I didn't talk about that at all. Other than I think we might have shown the highlight or something and you know, did a 1 minute thing on it. But as far as like it being a debatable topic, no, that was nothing. And then you saw the reaction and I go to myself, word? And I did a bit parodying, you know, a parody on the reaction to it. But that's not healthy. You know, before on this show, before the NBA playoffs started, one of my takes was I thought maybe it would be good for all of us to get a break from LeBron. Not because of LeBron himself or not because the playoffs wouldn't be or would be better without LeBron, but because we would get away from that constant, you know, hyper scrutiny of LeBron that just creates an echo chamber and a, you know, back and forth for every single outlet discussing the guy. So, I mean, there's a book to be done on this. And there's like, you know, it's interesting from a sociological perspective. But from a professional standpoint, I think it's kind of whack. You know, there are things to cover. And he should be covered. And he should be covered more than anybody else. Absolutely. But then there's, you know, a point where you got to check yourself and realize that's not a topic. That's not something you should be saying. And what you're doing is only a reaction to how people have been conditioned and the idea that talking about LeBron's going to get you clicks and going to get you views. What do you think? Has, you know, the coverage around LeBron, the things that people say, gone a little too far in your mind as well? Because only a weirdo gets upset about that AAU thing. 855-212-4227. It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.